Hi, Ravina. Thank you so much for coming on our live today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was just introducing everyone to a little bit about what we do. I was just getting into talking about you as well. So I'll let you take over. You can start by introducing yourself, talk a little bit about what you've done, where you've come from, and how Yogi Sattva started.
So I'm born and brought up from Mumbai. Yogi Sattva essentially was a domino effect. I kind of got into plant-based eating through yoga. And it was through my exploration of yoga and eating more plant-based that I decided to kind of pursue this a little bit more. At the time when I started, I didn't really have any intention of selling food.
Right.
So it just kind of happened through friends' encouragement. I just, you know, started a small email group with 12 people, and I used to sell food once a week. And then they kind of, recommended me, and it became like 12 to 25, 25 to 50. And I started in June of 2015.
Okay.
And then 3 months in, all the big magazines had picked me up. Like, oh, there's you, like, vegan chef, she's doing this type of food. Because in 2015, it was novelty.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, like, a lot of people are doing it right now. But in 2015, there was no one.
Right. So let's just, talk.
Yeah.
No, I think it's very interesting what you pointed out. You know, 2015, when being vegan itself, people didn't understand. What was it like? First of all, you have to educate people because we live in a country where a majority of people are vegetarian, and people don't understand what the difference is between eating plant-based vegetarian food versus being vegan. So how did you sort of overcome that challenge?
So I honestly just never saw it as a challenge. So what I did is I made food. I made food and I shared it with people. That is my entire approach, and it continues to be. I don't preach any one lifestyle to anybody. I think everybody has a right to choose what they want to eat. And that's my firm belief, because you know your DNA better than anyone else.
Absolutely.
But my main thing was that I just wanted to make this food. You know, I was so excited by it. I wanted more people to try it. And that is still my main approach. So I didn't really convince anyone by offering extensive education. I offered it through practical visualization in front of them, and there's no better way to convince somebody than with taste. You just pull them in, you know.
Right, but you're also, you know, advocating for a very, aspirational life, life sort of mission, which is basically farm to fork, eating healthy, eating organic, eating vegan. So it's not only, obviously it has to taste good at the end of the day, because you're not going to have something that doesn't taste good.
Yeah, but it's the first thing for food. Right. It's the first thing. If the food doesn't taste good, you don't have an audience. No matter how healthy you are, no matter what you preach, if your food does not taste good, your audience will run away.
Absolutely. So obviously, there's also preconceived notions with eating healthy or eating, you know, vegan, etc. Right? Because people don't associate that usually with something that will taste great. So how do you get people to try your food for the first time? What kind of people do you meet when they try your food for the first time? How do they hear about you? How does that work?
Okay, so I think the way that we really got around was that we did all the farmers markets. We did a lot of exhibitions. And by we, I mean only me. Like at that time, my dad was just of one person.
Right.
So it just kind of happened that way. And I was a very sales-oriented person. So I used to stop people and be like, do you want to try the most amazing thing in the world? Like my sales pitch were like next level confidence. I don't know from where I got it.
Right.
But I just thought like, if I can get somebody to try it, then I will educate them. So, you know, for my dairy-free ice creams, it used to be like, can I make you try something really amazing? Then they tried it. Like, oh my God, ice cream. I was like, yeah, do you know it's dairy-free? And that was the pull-in.
Right.
You know, so I just focused really on bringing the product out there and then educating. If you like the product, you're willing to hear the education. If I educate before the product, it's not the best sales pitch.
Right. I think your passion for the product also shines through just in this conversation as well. Right? I remember my first experience, you know, having food that was completely vegan at a restaurant. It was actually in Switzerland with a restaurant called Hilti, which I walked in expecting. I don't know if you heard of it, but I walked in expecting, you know, if you're in Switzerland, you'll probably get meat on the menu a lot. completely vegetarian food and it was delicious and it was vegan food as well. So
yeah.
I think what people don't realize is that it's they have sort of this impression which can only be broken once they have it unbiased, which is what you're able to do, right? You're supposed to be able to get people to sample something without any biases, and that's, I think, very important.
And also, like, you know, when I first started out, I did sort of go to many other places that were either teaching vegan food or selling vegan food. And the approach to the lifestyle was very like, we as humans are doing wrong on this planet. And
right.
we must correct ourselves. Now, I understand that's one way of doing it. And that's the, you know, that's the way of education. I just felt like it seemed too strong. Like, if I would feel uncomfortable, I couldn't imagine what that would do if I offered it to other people.
Absolutely.
I was very clear that this would not be my approach. While it would work for some, I would rather bring people in as a celebration and not tell them that, oh, you cannot eat this for these reasons, but instead say, like, you can eat this for so many more reasons.
Absolutely. No, I think that's very important because, you know, when we talk about entrepreneurship, etc., a lot of people are product passionate. So they make a fantastic product, but they don't know how to, you know, get their messaging right. And a lot of messaging is fear-based, which is what you are talking about, where we're saying that, hey, if you're going to kill the planet if you don't eat this way. But it should be optimism-based. It should be based on the fact that, hey, this is how easily you can, you know, make a small difference and enjoy your food and enjoy the process
of
eating. Right. And I think that's super cool. I also want to know a little bit about, you know, your farm to fork concept, because, you know, that's something that's people don't understand supply chains as well in India. And it's also an entrepreneur figuring that out is a little bit harder. Can you talk to me about your journey, about how you're reimagining the farm to fork concept with India in mind right now?
So when we started, like when I decided that I'd want to start selling food full time and have suppliers and stuff, I sourced food, so not I'm not talking about dry goods, but like fruit and veg from over 25 farms across Maharashtra to check the quality.
Right.
And I finally narrowed on like 3 or 4.
Right.
And the reason I narrowed on them is because I also kind of have been to their farms or kind of spoken to them, if not been personally, and understood their process, which was really important to me.
Right.
In India, the laws about organic work differently compared to the rest of the world.
Absolutely.
For a land to be organic, rest of the world, it has to not be filtered with any chemical or fertilizer for at least 25 years.
Right.
In India, that is 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Right? So the difference is huge.
Right.
So I kind of found a midway where I decided that I would go to farms who are at least about 5 to 10 years old. Because the organic concept, even while it existed, it had not picked up in the scale of production.
Right.
So I think with COVID, what happened initially was, of course, the supply chain went completely off because all the workers working in the farm were afraid and they went back to their villages. So that kind of stalled a lot of production. And then the second obstacle was monsoon, because we had torrential floods. The weather all over has been a bit crazy. So it's been difficult, to be honest, this season on the farmers. And early, at least in Mumbai, the fruit and veg delivery was happening. There was a lot of chaos on the streets because, you know, cops were either beating up the riders, saying, why aren't you staying home, or throwing their vegetable carts. Like, you must have seen many videos of this.
Right.
I understand the intent. I do question the method.
Right.
So I think then what happened in March was that we had to kind of take this decision where I just decided I'm going to work from home for a couple of months instead of my outlet space, because our entire chain of supply also fell. And I just decided to stick to desserts because I knew the dry goods would be available. Now, again, the chain of supply has opened up and everything's coming smoothly. And throughout COVID, I did have a consistent supply of organic food. Just not enough to sell.
Right.
So I couldn't add things on my savory menu. So right now I'm just doing dessert. And I made that very conscious call because I was like, I don't want to compromise on the quality of the food.
Right.
So I'm just going to wait. And also at the time, all my staff live in different areas. So bringing them to work at that time didn't seem like the right decision. But hopefully in October, I'm hoping to move back.
We'll talk a little bit more about your dessert menu a little bit later. I think it's really fantastic. But I also want to know a little bit about how difficult is it to maintain authenticity? Because that's very important in your business, very important to you, right? But your supply chains are so volatile and you want to, you know, serve organic, etc. But you also have this consumer demand of something they want. And that you have to keep meeting. So it's a very difficult choice you have to make every single day.
It is, but we say no. Like, we are very comfortable with saying no. Like, if we don't have the thing, we tell them, you know, we don't have this. We can either offer this replacement, if you're okay with. Or we rather not give you the dish. So most times they understand. And now, to be honest, after sourcing for at least 5 years, the farmers do give us preference when we ask. Because they know that, you know, we have the clients who want to eat the food. And usually, like, we don't really have that many hiccups. If a dish gets over, it gets over. You know, so we don't, like, we have so many other options. We tell them, please pick something else. And we rather not sell something that's not true to our values than just to make the sale. And that's always been consistent.
Right. I think that's a very interesting approach, you know, to be able to say no, so being so comfortable with saying no. Another question I have is, see, you started this 5 years ago now. And it's over 5 years now. How can people have now become more used to? It's still not caught on, right? Vegan completely still hasn't caught on. But how have you seen consumer perception shift since the 5 years you've been here? Like, for example, a very easy put down of vegan food is that, oh, it's very expensive. I can just eat vegetarian food. How do you sort of deal with things like that? What is your perspective on that?
So I agree it is expensive. And I tell people that very honestly. It also depends on the quality of ingredients we use. And there are a lot of people who do vegan food that's marginally much cheaper because the quality of ingredients are cheaper.
Right.
So it is expensive. We're not selling traditional food or dessert. It is expensive and I completely agree. And it also depends on how high you want to reach the bar. I invite you to my cafe and I just give you sabzi dal roti, which you can eat in your house, what have I accomplished as a chef?
Absolutely.
So it is my, it's also my creativity on the plate that may have a higher price point in terms of sourcing of those ingredients.
Right.
So I understand. But what I do in conjunction with explaining that vegan food is expensive is also teaching. So I give people options that if you don't want to come and eat with us or you don't want to spend on vegan food, you always have the option of making it yourself. So I always give that option as well because I feel education in conjunction with the sales is the way to go forward. And once they come to the class, they have appreciation because they taste the organic food. They see how good it is. Of course, now we do classes online, so we always taste the food.
Right.
It's a whole new ball game.
Right.
But you know, there's more appreciation for the product. And it's really simple. See, it's about spending that extra 2,000 to 3,000 on your grocery in a month versus spending that money maybe later, perhaps due to some medical illness.
Right.
You know, God forbid that happens, but it's like pay the farmer now or pay the farmer later.
Right.
It's that concept.
Right.
So it's the priorities of it. We are much comfortable buying like 10 things very conveniently in a Zara or an H&M versus having to spend an extra couple of thousand rupees on our own food. Because
Absolutely.
Food is just meant to be cheap, you know, and that's not the concept. We should be spending more on our food and lesser on the other things.
Absolutely. And I think your business model is also very interesting. Where you don't see a lot of chefs go to the detail of, I'm going to teach you how to cook. You know, I'm going to teach you my secrets. It's sort of, there's a veil over being a chef, right?
Yeah.
I'm good at what I do, so you pay me and you can hire me. But how did you sort of make that decision? You know what, I'm going to make this open for everyone, accessible. Because if I go to a vegan cafe and I can make the same dish at home, that's, you know, as an entrepreneur, I'm thinking, why should I give away my secrets? Or why are you doing that?
Yeah, so we don't teach exactly what's on our menu. We do keep a segregation so that obviously the business model can survive, you know, as well as we can teach. We always offer variations. We'll not teach exactly what's on our menu. We always teach a variation of it. But what I understood from when I started, there was no education in this field. So people were trying to be vegan, but they didn't know enough, right? So they were often committing these mistakes. And then there were chefs or bakers or home bakers getting into this really quickly, wanting to, you know, just put vegan on the menu, but didn't have enough education. So, you know, oftentimes the chocolate would have dairy. Or, you know, it would be called gluten-free, but the baking powder, baking soda wasn't gluten-free. And nobody knew this. Like, nobody knew how to ask these questions. You know, you're selling me a chocolate chip cookie, and the chocolate chip in the cookie is not vegan. But the cookie is vegan.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make the cookie vegan, right?
Right.
So it was just that. It was to change give people the correct knowledge. Very great that so many options we have. I feel it's amazing. Even if I go out to a restaurant and say I have options as a vegan, I'm a complete support in that. But have the right knowledge, right? You never know how severe somebody's intolerance is, and you never know how severe somebody's, like, how strong somebody's belief system is. So you never want to hurt them.
Right. I think that's a very refreshing take, you know, on, you know, running a business. So you're saying, hey, I'm not only going to share my secrets with you, I'm going to tell you how to do it the right way and tell you what all it takes. Because what that creates is the sense of transparency and trust in your business as well. Saying that, hey, you're doing so well, good care of everyone around her, then what I'm eating is probably very well sourced, etc. So it's a double validation. And I always...
I was just going to say, and we're very open about whom we source from. Like, we tell you, like, oh, this has come from here. Oh, this has come from here. Especially if you come to our cafe and you eat. Of course, now it's closed. It's going to be operating as a delivery kitchen for the rest of the year. But when, you know, when we've had people eat in with us, we always say that this came from here, this came from here. We tag the farmers very often in our posts. I've done an entire post on my personal Instagram with like 6 to 8 farmers that I tagged, especially during COVID, saying like, guys, y'all don't need to step out. These people deliver hope.
Right.
We're very vocal that, you know, we want them to get business. So please buy from them.
Right. And that helps the ecosystem as a whole. And if the ecosystem grows, your business grows as well, right? So that's how I'm thinking about it. I love your attitude towards optimism, etc. And I want to share that with the rest of the people watching as well. So especially during, you know, such harsh times like COVID. What have you done to sort of get your business going back up, rebooting back up? What are the kind of things you're doing in terms of, you can talk a little bit more about your dessert menu, how you're talking about festivals and seasonal food as well. So feel free to divulge that as well right now.
So I think the first thing that I did when COVID hit was I took a break for 10 days.
Yeah.
You know, there was so much pressure to the buildup of having to close shop, right? Because every day there was new information and the rumor mill was on. So I took a break for 10 days. I slept. I had a great routine with no work. It was fantastic. Right. I must say, great reboot to my system.
Right.
And then I decided I'm going to adapt. So I had no staff. I was not working from my place, and I said, I sat down with my family and I said, this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to do a minimal menu and work from home and request for space in the fridge and freezer. Will this be doable? So they said, yes, definitely you can do it. And we just came up with a system of no contact delivery where the riders can enter the building so it doesn't sort of affect the other members in the building. I got all the latex gloves, the mask, the shield, everything. I got everything done. And I said, I'm just going to start cooking and see how it goes. And at that time, supply completely stopped. So a lot of dry goods used to come from the south of India for us. And nothing, shipments had stopped, right? Because we had no shipments for 3 weeks.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we were just, I was just relying on shipments that I already had.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'm just going to do what I can with what I have. And I just offered a very tiny menu and it was just selling. Because, you know, people knew that I was cooking the food. I was doing it from home. There was a lot of sanitation. I used to sort of do videos of how I'm doing it, how I'm sanitizing. That really helped.
Right.
And for the online class, I was very afraid as to how I would do it. Because I was like, how am I going to teach these people online? So in my first class, I only took 10 people out of fear that I wouldn't be able to do justice. And then, you know, through the class, the confidence came. And the main thing that I kind of broke a barrier for is the digital protection. Because what happens is if I give out my recipes online, handwritten with the steps and methods, then everybody can pass it around. So then my model in the Culinary Institute completely fails.
Absolutely.
I just decided I would only give ingredient lists with exact quantities, but the notes, like the method and step, they would have to come to class and learn and make notes.
Okay.
And and the classes are half price. So it's win-win.
Yeah, no, that works very well. And also, can you also talk a little bit about how you're sort of adapting your menus going forward now that things are starting to open up a little bit as well?
Yeah, so I've been going really festive. So I did a Raksha Bandhan special. I did, you know, like a few boxes. I did a whole Raksha Bandhan hamper. And now I'm doing a paleo, which is a grain-free and vegan menu for Ganpati.
Right.
Entirely like all of modaks, and there are 4 flavors. And I've taken I've done a twist on the traditional coconut laddu as well.
Right.
So I'm just focusing on these things along with the classes and along with keeping in trend with what is happening. So right. I'm sticking to dessert at the moment, but hopefully by October we open up. The plan is post Ganpati to relaunch my right. existing cheese menu with a little bit more. So like my vegan cheese with an extensive more offerings.
Right.
So just trying to do more within what is possible for one person to achieve at this time.
Yeah, that's super commendable, you know, because in the restaurant business, obviously, it's a people business as well, right? A lot of people involved. Yeah. It's a whole process, a system in place. So you're basically starting from scratch now and sort of doing day by day and building a menu up from scratch. And if anyone is interested in your paleo and vegan Modak menu, I'm sure you have links on your page, right?
Yeah, and you can just like head to I Am A Yogi Sattva. There's a WhatsApp sort of number on top in the bio, and my communications manager will help you in ordering and making sure you get your food, and I will be making it.
Yeah, there you go. And obviously a little bit about your classes, how do we sign up?
So same with the classes, that we post the menu of what we're going to teach weekly on a Monday. You can also WhatsApp us to be added to the broadcast list, and then we can send you the link to sign up. Next week, I'm teaching a desserts menu. It has lots of yummy things. It also has a vegan vanilla cupcake, which I'm sure you like.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rina. It was fantastic talking
Thank
to you.
You.
Love your energy. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.